Hey, this is Michael Sedini from Eagle Imports and Walk the Talk America.
Hey guys, this is Julie Golub with Team Smith & Wesson, and you're listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast.
From the Ghost Tactical Production Studio, welcome to the Armed Citizen Podcast. And now your host, Trey Miller.
Welcome to the Armed Citizen Podcast. I am your host, Trey Miller with Ghost Tactical Productions. And this week we've got a really cool kind of interview. We've got Rob Pincus, who's a good friend of ours in the channel. Rob was over in Germany for the IWA, and we got him to come on live, which was about 8:30 in the morning our time, and it was obviously in the afternoon over in Germany, but he came on to talk about the FK Brno, and it was a really awesome conversation, so let's go ahead and dive right in. Live from behind German lines and the IWA Outdoor Classics, we've got our good friend Rob Pincus. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, good to see you guys. And it's 3:42, which means it's almost late as far as not having any alcoholic beverages. But we are at EWA, the European version of SHOT Show. You know, we talked about SHOT Show, like a month ago.
Right.
35 weeks ago, we talked about kind of going into that, what that's all about. And I said, you know, hey, we should do a show about what goes on at the European version. And because of this new product launch and you guys being interested in it, I'm glad this was able to all come together early morning in the U.S., late afternoon here. But here we are.
You know, you sent some information over a couple nights ago about the FK Brno that you're working on over there. But before we get into that gun, for those of us and out there that haven't been to IWA, it's basically the SHOT Show of Europe. But can you kind of explain the size comparison with many companies or the people that are there?
My guess is like the footprint of the show is probably 60-70% of the footprint of SHOT Show. But there are as a percentage basis, there are many larger booths here. So the distributors, they may be 70% of the size of the footprint, but it might only be half as many exhibitors, right? Because there aren't as many small exhibitors at this show. The other thing about it, and I think we talked about this for your regular viewers, we talked about how SHOT Show has evolved over the last decade, 15 years of embracing the law enforcement and tactical community. In a way that it was not embraced 20 years ago, you know, when I first started going 20, 25 years ago. And EVA has done that as well, but what they've done is they have not added a law enforcement tactical to the main show, which is still very much more traditional than our SHOT Show currently is, as far as hunting and, you know, the clothing that goes along with the hunting and all that kind of stuff. We have instead here added 2 days before the main show that is exclusively law enforcement tactical called Enforce Tech. And that's where you'll see still a lot of the smaller booths, a lot of the maybe younger companies that are more involved in that military law enforcement tactical market, which I know a lot of people are surprised to hear exists on the consumer side here in Europe. But, you know, I always tell people in Europe, the countries really are very much like our states in terms of their gun laws. So there may not be any states over here that are, or there may not be any countries over here that are like Arizona level gun freedom. But there's a lot of them that are more than New Jersey, you know.
So, well, yeah.
In Czech Republic, you can carry a gun. Italy, you can carry a gun. Germany, you can own guns. I'm talking about handguns, not SBRs. In the UK, people imagine, well, you can't have handguns. Well, in the six counties of Northern Ireland, the Isle of Man, you can still have carry permits. Suppressors are it's almost considered wrong if you don't have a suppressor.
Exactly. I know there's a bunches of ranges in Europe that if you don't have suppressors, you can't shoot there at all.
When I hunted in the UK, I was in an area where we had to use a suppressor on the centerfire gun, Southern rifle. So it really is, it's as complex over here as it is in the US. Generally, yes, guns are harder to own. They don't have the Second Amendment, all that. But there's a huge gun industry and gun community all across Europe. And this really is a worldwide show. So we have, you know, just like SHOT Show, we have people from Asia, people from Africa, people from the Middle East, you know, everybody's here.
So I want to ask a quick question, and I know over here you have the Berettas, the Glocks, the Walthers, the HKs, the rock stars from Europe that are over here, but over there, are they the same status over there? Are they rock stars over there?
Oh, yeah, I mean, so take the whatever, like when you walk into Glock's booth or Sig's booth, it's impressive at SHOT Show, but now add 30% to 50% of that space. Because they're homes, so they have to own it here. You know, I mean, they have the booths here are even more well-developed and even more sort of, they're little mini villages. They're buildings. They're two stories tall. They've got offices and upstairs, downstairs. It's really amazing what they do here. Even where I am, FK Brno, which is a relatively young company based in the Czech Republic, we've got what would be considered a very large booth by SHOT Show standards, and it's a medium-sized booth here with separate enclosed office spaces and, a giant screen playing video and display cases, and you probably have 12 people working the booth, but it's still not considered a large booth by U.S. standards.
Now, you bring up the FK Brno, but before we dive into that, I want to take a quick break and talk about a great company that helps us out. I want to talk about Sportsman's Guide for a minute.
Guys, if you're interested in the outdoors at all, you've got to go check out sportsmansguide.com. They've got products for everything for you to pursue all of your outdoor passions, like fishing, camping, hiking, hunting, obviously firearms, ammunition, anything and everything that you guys could possibly want or need for your outdoors expeditions. Sportsman's Guide's got them. And if you really want to support us and our projects, then please head over to our website, ghosttacticalproductions.com. And on the upper banner there, you'll see corporate partners. Click on that and go shopping to Sportsman's Guides through our link on our website. Not only will you be getting some great deals, but you'll actually get us a piece of that pie as well. And you can help support the channel and help support all of our projects as well.
So a couple nights ago, you sent me some information about a gun that you've been working over there, the FK Brno, and this is a fascinating gun. It's a multi-caliber barreled gun that could be used for a multitude of different things, and I think that maybe the law enforcement and military might have been the initial thought process, but they are bringing it to the American market and the civilian market. Can you kind of go into the features and talk about this gun? Because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, so the gun over my shoulder, the original gun, the field pistol, has gotten a lot of attention on the internet. It's a very limited release pistol. It's essentially going to become a collector's item. And it was a gun that was built to fulfill a passion or a mission that the founder of FK Brno had in terms of developing a very specific tool. And the tool in his head was based on some of his experiences professionally in the Middle East, where he believed that what protective services, particularly executive protection agents, dignitary protection, needed to have a compact, concealable, carryable pistol or rifle or PDW or something that they could reasonably use from concealment or inside of a vehicle to respond to an ambush that was 50 to 100, 150 meters away with a rifle-based ambush. That was like an AK-47-based ambush. And the way to do that was to replicate the terminal ballistics and deliver it in a package that you could deliver the bullet 100 meters away and expect to terminate the threat. So the round was actually developed first. The 7.5 bottleneck cartridge, the FK 7.5 FK, this is a 95 grain bullet, basically. It can go up to 125 grains. And it's moving out of a 6-inch barrel at 2,100 feet per second. So 5-inch barrel guns are moving at about 2,000 feet per second. And the interesting thing is, because of the design of the bullet and the shape, the weight, this bullet is still moving at over 1,500 feet per second at 100 meters, and it's moving at over 1,100 feet, so it's still supersonic at 150 meters. So this has rifle-style terminal ballistics out to 150 meters, and it does. People can see the videos at the FK Brno YouTube channel. When you shoot this into gel, when you shoot it through skin, at 100 meters, this looks like an AK-47 round in body at 100 meters. This is a machined copper bullet, hollow point. There's a conical bullet also. There's and obviously in the U.S. we need to make them out of copper. They can be made out of brass also for international and military law enforcement use. And people can imagine what this bullet's going to do in those configurations as far as armor and things like that. So the gun itself, this field pistol, was basically a hand-built Uber CZ-75 with a unique recoil system. It's a recoil system that FK Brno does own the patent to in the U.S. There was a little bit of a fight over that patent last year, but FK Brno does own that patent and was successful in defending their right to that lowered recoil system. This is a $7,500 gun, and much fun has been made of the fact that they have a $7,500 gun with proprietary ammunition, which is also expensive and relatively, unique source. You have to kind of get it from them. And a lot of people have said, that's an interesting novelty, but it's not really useful. It's not really practical. And the guy who buys that is the same guy who buys a Bugatti. So what are the three complaints? The three complaints are it's super crazy expensive. It's really more power than people generally think they need in the average type gun. And there are people are worried about the ammo being available. So enter the PSD. The PSD is the new gun that we're launching. I've been involved as a consultant in some of the final fine points, I guess you'd say, of exactly what this gun is going to be. The intention was always to have a polymer version of the gun, but essentially just a polymer version of the field pistol only answers potentially the cost issue. It doesn't necessarily answer the rest of the issues. So what this is now is a multi-caliber polymer frame gun. It's a drop-in barrel conversion to 10mm auto and 9mm NATO. And that's really the story here. The story is you can now own the capabilities of the 7.5 in a polymer frame gun with a drop-in barrel and shoot 9mm NATO, 9mm plus P, 9mm plus P plus all day long. And what that means for the average sport shooter is an incredibly well-built gun that is heavy and designed to handle the recoil of the 7.5, which means shooting a 9mm out of this is like shooting a 22. Shooting a 7, it was actually a slow motion of me shooting a 3-round burst out of this gun with the 7.5, showing how you can manage recoil and how fast the gun can be shot even with the full power loads. So if someone's looking for a gun for steel shooting, action shooting, competition shooting, throw the 9mm in there, and this gun is really amazing from a sports shooting standpoint. For the law enforcement military professional, they get now the capability potentially of the 7.5 in the gun, but they can put the 9mm barrel in and do 90% of their training with the 9mm round that's already in their inventory. The 10mm auto just kind of fills that middle ground niche. It gives you a powerful alternative to the 9 that's more commonly available, and again, potentially for hunting and other applications, bowling, pin competition, whatever you want to do as far as that goes. The polymer gun is, they're all cut for red dots. They come with a slide plate, put the red dot on it. They have standard sights or a ghost ring sight option. It's different from the ghost ring on the field pistol. It's a much larger front sight, more intended for combative defensive use. It is a single action gun. It's a CZ-75 type, Tamfolio type trigger system, safety, ergonomics, all of that. Did I say the price point yet? Pistol, two barrels, two magazines for the 9mm, two magazines for the 7.5 is all going to be MSRP about $2,000.
Really?
Yeah. So knowing what the distributor cost is going to be in the U.S., it won't surprise me to see these selling for $1,950, $1,990, whatever.
You're getting two guns basically for that.
And you're getting the capability of a gun that the only other way you were going to get the capability of that 7.5 was to spend $7,500. And you get this incredibly fun and fast shooting 9mm. To go with it. Essentially you end up with a primary capability and a secondary gun as far as the terminal ballistics of that 7.5 round. From an executive protection standpoint, especially, around the world in a very high risk environment, right. Not average, security position. And one of the big complaints about the original gun was there weren't a lot of holsters developed for it because it was such a low circulation and low number of ever intended to be made. There's been about 1,000 have been made, and right now all production is focused on this gun. So the holster development and accessory development, of course, wasn't something that was prioritized. Holsters, obviously, this is an inside the waistband appendix carry. I've seen 5 different holsters over here in Europe already made for this gun. And we've also got a rail version, obviously, that's going to be available as well. You can see these little cutouts. The original idea was to sort of go with an adapter that would put a rail capability on it, but that gave you a really kind of bulky situation. So the frame has been reworked. I actually have a 3D printed version here. We'll have the test versions from the actual polymer in about 2 weeks for the integrated Picatinny rail for accessories. This is a 95 grain bullet. So when you compare this polymer gun to like a Glock 21, put 14 rounds of 230 grain 45 next to 16 rounds or 17 rounds of the 95 grain, well, literally those bullets weigh 2.5 times as much as these do, right? So if it's 2.5 times as heavy and you only get 1 or 2 extra rounds of this caliber versus the 45, when you have a loaded gun, a loaded PSD next to a loaded Glock 23, there's virtually no difference.
I mean, the ballistics of that 7.5 round is crazy. The energy coming off of, it's basically a rifle round and a handgun. And I think that having a double action trigger would be really, really interesting and probably difficult for most people when you're talking about a 10 to 12 pound trigger pull plus the energy coming out of the muzzle from that projectile. That would be a really interesting thing.
It really, I mean, obviously, if you had a double action, single action gun, the recoil isn't going to have any of the first shot is going to be the first shot. I think
right.
when I tell people you can hit a man-sized steel target at 100 meters with the butterfly sights that come on the field pistol, or certainly with the red dot, I think a lot of people are sort of skeptical. I see them. Maybe I've had a dozen, 15 people come out on the range and do it. And whether it's been in Florida or been out here somewhere, over here somewhere, and people are kind of surprised how easy it is. Now, part of that is it's a single action crisp trigger. If we put a striker trigger in there, we put a double action trigger in, then yeah, of course that potential for precision goes away. So one of the other caveats to, wait a minute, Rob, I thought you hated guns with manual safeties. Yeah, for close quarters personal defense in the United States, for the typical law enforcement patrol response in the United States, striker fired guns all day long. But if you're asking me to take someone, even if they're a highly trained guy, and expect them to have their long gun go down and be able to pull a pistol and actually capitalize on the capabilities of this round at 100 or 150 meters against another human being, I think we all know that without a single action trigger, I don't care how good you are, that's going to just amplify how difficult that's going to be to do. The single action trigger is really what makes applying this potential tenable. So it's right. You know, everything's a balance, right? So, and I think that's been my biggest internal struggle. Not like, I mean, I know I like the gun, I understand what the gun's for, and in the role this gun is meant for, I think it's as well designed as it can be right now in this polymer version. But if people say, well, Rob, you're compromising your integrity because you are a striker fired guy and you've always said single action guns are just more complex and you don't need to overcomplicate the scenario, I agree. But we're not talking about shooting at 50 or 100 or 150 meters in a counter ambush, or when your rifle goes down, and actually being able to pull this out with that folding brace and not just be making noise at somebody 100 yards away with a 9mm, you know, pop gun. It's a different role. And in that role, to me, this is no different than you telling me I'm a hypocrite because I allow safeties on ARs. It's a different thing. You know, and that to me has been not an internal struggle, but an external struggle to explain. Because even like buddies of mine are like, I don't get it, Rob, but you're not a safety guy. Well, no, close quarters, personal defense, law enforcement in the U.S. doesn't make any sense. This is a little bit different.
Well, keeping in talking about the 7.5 round, the ballistics out of that handgun are phenomenal. 2,100 feet per second out of a 6-inch barrel. But I want to kind of ask you about maybe the development of a PCC or some kind of a carbine using that same round. I would think that there'd be maybe a want or a need for a military or, you know, police over there that would say, if we can get this velocity out of a handgun, wouldn't it be nice to use the same caliber round in a carbine of some sort and have that round being used both in a sidearm and a primary carbine? I thought that'd be interesting.
Yeah, so when I first saw this thing in, I don't know, I guess I first shot it in 2017. So I think I first heard about it and was talking to them about it in 2016. And that was my instant question was, okay, that's neat, the handgun thing. And I know it's going to be super expensive, but talk to me about a subgun or a PDW. And I will say to you, it's definitely something that's in the works. So the potential to go from 6 inches is what they have at the field pistol, 5.3 on the PSD. You could go to a 10-inch gun. Maybe the optimum configuration is going to be an expanding stock version that comes out of a 7-inch barrel or an 8-inch barrel.
Right.
So that's going to be played with, I assure you, over the next year or so. But I that was one of the first questions I asked was, you know, I sort of looked at the handgun as potentially a little bit novelty when I really hadn't played with it, hadn't shot it, didn't understand it as much. And I thought immediately about a PDW or a subgun. And yeah, this round would be great. I'm not sure that at some point when I have like 23 minutes, if that ever happens,
yeah, good luck with that.
I would love to see an AR barrel. just to play with it. Like, give me an barrel chamber in this, and let me just see what that feels like with a pistol brace and a 10-inch barrel. Just to play with it a little bit, I think it'd be interesting.
You know, I'd like to probably see an 8, 8.5-inch barrel with this, because there's some serious energy coming out of that round, and I think it'd be fun as hell to shoot. And as far as the American market, do we have a timeline as to when we might be able to expect to see this in the market?
Optimally, I don't say optimally. Best case scenario, it's probably going to be 120 to 150 days. They're looking at delivering here in some of the countries in Europe as quickly as 60 days. The permitting process is it's actually interesting for them, including when they come over to the U.S. Once the ATF approves it, there's two steps. And honestly, like the way it's run with the other gun, from what I'm familiar with some other companies, once the ATF has approved it for import, the paperwork almost always ends up going faster in the U.S. than it does over here for the export in some cases. So it could be the ATF approves it in 30 days. You know, of course, there was a slowdown with the shutdown in terms of processing. But let's say the ATF approves the pistol itself in 30 days. It might be another 30 days before they get export from here. But the importer is standing by and waiting, and the conversations are already happening with retailers. The retail price on this to the U.S. Gun dealer is going to allow him to make more than he normally does on a Glock or a similar type gun, and still be in that $2,000 area. We right around $1,900 to $2,000 retail. Since the community's already sort of accepted, okay, to have this capability, I got to pay some crazy outrageous price. $2,000 for this with really two guns in one starts to seem more tenable. You know, it's not the everyday gun. It's not going to replace your Glock 19. It's not going to replace your XDS. It's not going to replace, you know, that everyday carry gun. But it's a gun that I think will serve a lot of roles. Handgun hunters, again, I think we're going to see a lot of competition. Shooters get excited about more 38 Super. 40 Smith & Wesson, certainly an option. Hunters, the handgun hunters, there's no doubt. I mean, I've taken a pretty large deer at 120 meters with this, with a single shot to the torso, iron sights put around into it, not a perfect heart shot by any stretch, a little bit back and high on the torso, but that hydrodynamic shock, because it's still a rifle bullet at 120 meters, that thing went about, I don't know, 8-10 yards and dropped, and it was done. It's a very impressive round. It's an impressive gun. And $2,000 is still a lot of money, but that's a lot of gun, too.
Well, let me ask you a question about over there in Europe. Obviously, some of the European companies are big over here, but let's take Ruger and Colt and Smith & Wesson and Springfield, some of the bigger American-made companies. How are they over there? Are they just as popular over there as some of the counterparts of Europe are over here?
The majors all have a pretty good presence here. In fact, I was at a gun shop right here in Nuremberg yesterday, and they have two big main displays when you walk into the place, and one of them's Colt and the other one's Walther, here in Germany. So American guns are sort of coveted here. There's a mystique to them, especially like the revolvers and things like that. They have some AR versions. They have their own ARs here that we can't get in the U.S. They're pretty impressive, actually. But when it comes to handguns, there's still a lot of reverence. I mean, it's kind of the same reverence that a Colt revolver or a 1911 gets in the U.S., as a collectible, as a finely made gun, the same reputation over here. On the other hand, things like the Smith & Wesson Shield is a gun that a lot of guys really like over here as a carry gun, off-duty police, things like that. The M&P is a very popular gun with a lot of guys here. I had a conversation the other day with someone, and she was, you know, I heard everyone carries a gun in America. And I'm like, nah, everyone carries a gun. Well, that's what I heard, and well, it's not true. Like, well, my friend went to America, and they said everyone goes, okay, I guess they did.
You're right. I'm wrong.
Same thing, and people in America, well, no one in Europe can have guns. Who cares what they think about guns? Well, that's not true, you know.
Now, you bring up an interesting topic there, Rob, about gun shops in Europe, and can you kind of give us an idea of what someone has to go through when they actually walk into a gun shop to purchase a firearm?
Yeah, there's Germany's pretty strict on the training requirement prior to being able to buy a gun. You have to go through a lot of training and licensing. Most people get into it through hunting traditionally. There's also sport shooting, being a member of a club, things like that. that allow you to sort of qualify to have a certain number or certain types of guns. And every country kind of has their own rules around that. In Germany, it is like you can't do defensive training in Germany as a civilian. You can't get a concealed carry permit. It's virtually impossible to get a concealed carry permit in Germany as a private citizen. Whereas you go into Italy, it's much more common. You go into Switzerland, it's even more common. You go into the Czech Republic or Slovakia, it's like, I mean, at one point in the last decade, I saw the numbers in the Czech Republic, 80% of gun owners could legally conceal carry. And that's far, far greater than the number of gun owners in the U.S. right now, even with all the, if you give credit to all of the constitutional carry states, we're at like 33, 34 million people who can carry concealed legally in the U.S., but there's 80 to 100 million gun owners, depending on whose numbers you use. So we're somewhere between, you know, 30 and 40%. And they're like double that in the Czech Republic. Now, their number of total gun owners might be 500,000, right? But in other words, my point being, it's a strong gun culture, and there are places here in Europe where carrying a gun or training for defense or shooting competition is pretty normal in terms of a way of life. It's at least as normal as it is in, you know, Virginia, or at least as normal as it is in, I don't know, pick another like mediocre gun state, Illinois. Right, Michigan. You know, it's not again. Okay, it's not Arizona, but it's also not, you know, New Jersey.
Now, Rabbi, I want to ask you a question about maybe AR-15 style weapons over in Europe, and obviously they don't have the NFA to deal with that we do with regulations and restrictions. But are the designs over there similar to ours, or do they have their own kind of designs over there?
Both. There's a lot more subgun type PDW over here because they don't have NFA. So things like, you know, foregrips, short barrels, like that's just really not even in their vernacular. Suppressors are much more common in many of the countries over here than they are in the U.S. because they're sort of encouraged differently. And then the other hand, now Germany, you can't put a flashlight on a gun, right? Like that's not, in fact, I had to have a company bring me a inert shell of a laser light combo that doesn't have a light and doesn't have a laser that's operational in it. It's just for show for some of the pictures we're taking here of the rail model, right? The PSD with the rail. So there are different, and I know Americans who've flown over with not thinking anything about it, having a weapon mounted light sample in their checked luggage. They come in on the way out when the luggage gets checked to get on the plane. They've been pulled off the plane here in the US. I know two people particularly that's happened to, and I know somebody else, I heard about somebody else being arrested from one of the major laser companies, I don't know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago as well, because people just don't understand that the strictness and how seriously they take that here. But the idea of the designs of the gun is mostly affected by barrel length and the foregrip and those kinds of little pieces. As far as the ARs, 10 years ago, there were at least as many really cool, high-end, you know, billet, machined AR type cool designs as there were in the US. Now, US had that big spike in the market, and that's kind of coming down now. So the US kind of exploded with, you know, after Sandy Hook, all the people making every variation of ARs, and most of the ones that survived that big boom were high-end billet, really nicely made ARs. But that was a big trend here. You know, 10 years ago, I was seeing a lot of that here because people weren't just sort of making another forged AR or getting their upper and lower from the same place, but with a new name on the side. Like a lot of the manufacturers at that time were here in the U.S. So there was some what I would consider innovation in that, side handle chargers, ambidextrous controls. I was seeing a lot of that over here 10 years ago when it wasn't as common to see a lot of that kind of stuff in the U.S.
You know, it's funny, you were talking 3-round bursts over there, and most Americans that haven't served in the military have never experienced a 3-round burst. But over in Europe, do they allow 3-round bursts normally?
Oh, so it would still be considered fully automatic.
Okay. All right.
It's still a special control in
most countries.
I think there may be a couple countries in Central Europe or Eastern Europe where there's no difference once you have a certain level of license. In other words, once you've gotten a certain level of permitting, you can have the full auto, but I think it's still particularly controlled in almost all of Western Europe and all the Central European countries that I've
heard. So they have their own sort of NFA, pretty much.
Yeah, it might be. It's usually more like no or yes.
I hear you. So if it's no, there is no going to get your stamp and it's okay. It's just no.
Yeah, just no. It's Massachusetts, no.
You know, the concept of this gun is phenomenal, and I guess really the only hiccup or the thought process for most people would be the price, and I get that.
I do too. You know, and again, you didn't see me, you know, running around trying to defend the idea of everybody needs to have or consider how they might use a $7,500 gun. This gun, I think, is going to be a lot more useful to a lot more people for a whole bunch of different reasons, and even on the novelty. You know, I know plenty of guys. I mean, yeah, I've been in this industry for a long time, been in the gun community for a long time. There's plenty of guys who have $2,000 worth of AR, and the AR itself, and the 18 magazine they've got, and the, you know, the light they put on it, and the other stock, and then they got it Cerakoted, and then, you know, and they've got seven ARs. So if a guy's got seven ARs, the one I see him posting on Instagram, or the one I see him showing up to the range with, he's spent at least $2,000 on. I got, if you're a gun guy and you're thinking, do I need an 8th AR or do I maybe want to have this cool thing?
Or a Colt Python. What would you rather have?
Well, trust me. I mean, my dad had a Colt Python. I grew up shooting a Colt Python. Unfortunately, our house was burglarized and we were out. And
Oh, no.
I got stolen or I'd have it today. But I would spend $2,000 on this long before I'd spend $3,000 on a Colt Python. And that, it has this incredibly high capability for the guy who likes guns in the U.S. market. And you, for what you would spend on a good AR and less than you would spend on a good AR plus all the accoutrement, you can have this kind of very unique handgun. I think that's the sales pitch, right? Everybody else is going to figure out why they want it. If I have to convince you, it's because it's cool.
Well, we know that SHOT Show in the U.S. is 4 days, but how long is IWA over there, and how long are you going to be there? Because I'm sure you're not just going to be there just for the show.
I've been over here a lot the last 3 weeks. The show itself is 4 days, and as I said, the law enforcement military show, which also has a lot of training involved. It's almost like the old Trexpo used to be in the U.S. for law enforcement guys. I remember that show. That was Wednesday, Thursday. EVA starts today and then ends on Monday. I'm out of here Tuesday morning, and I'll be down in Florida by next weekend.
Well, Rob, it's been great having you on as always, and it's always good talking to you, and especially being overseas at IWA and talking to FK Burno. And make sure you go check him out on all of his different social media platforms. And it's not just Rob Pincus, but it's the 2A.org. You've got Walk the Talk America that he's involved in, and obviously the Personal Defense Network with his ICE training. So Rob is a man of many hats. He's all over the world spreading the gospel of the Second Amendment. And I just want to say thanks for coming on, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Well, guys, as always, thanks for listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast. If you have any questions or anything like that or comments, please leave them and we will make sure we get them answered. If you have any suggestions on who you'd like for us to get on the podcast, leave a comment below as well and we'll see what we can do by getting them on. Thanks again, as always, guys. Semper Fi. Thanks for listening to the Armed Citizen Podcast. To check out our full lineup of pro-gun media content, including our product reviews, live shows, and other Second Amendment activity, please check out our website, www.ghosttacticalproductions.com.